I don't know what it is, Sally, about these high-tech women that also run marathons. What's the deal? It's also a marathoner. Our next speaker is Chuck Sattler. Chuck is Vice President of Genetic Programs at Select Sires and has been with Select Sires now for about 8 years. Chuck grew up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin and received his bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin, as well as his master's degree. And Chuck served as the Genetic Programs Administrator for the National Association of Animal Breeders for 12 years before joining Select Sires. And I'd also add that Chuck is currently on the National Association of Animal Breeders Dairy Sire Evaluation Committee. So, Chuck, we appreciate you coming and really also appreciate you being brave enough to show up amongst all these beef producers. And thank you very much and look forward to your presentation.
Thanks, Jim. And it's my pleasure to be here amongst all you folks. I think Jim's got the program organized very well, and I was a little apprehensive about putting my talk together and seeing how that might work with some of the other speakers, but I think they're going to come together really nicely. I'm not going to talk so much about the technical side of parentage testing. I want to talk about some practical experiences that we've had in the moving this out into the real world and doing a high volume of sampling and testing with the SNP parentage. Of course, our decisions are we have a little different perspective going into this than a breed association. We're just trying mainly to improve the accuracy of our progeny testing program, which we test over 300 Holsteins a year and get about 100 daughters on each of those bulls. And certainly any kind of, it's highly dependent on accurate identification, and all of this testing is happening in commercial settings where we know that the identification isn't necessarily perfect. So I'm going to start by talking a little bit about some of the background behind our decision-making process to help us decide to go forward with the parentage testing effort. We have been working with the identity folks and developing some alternative sampling methods, and we've been kind of playing in this area before we got busy. And then last summer, the folks at Beltsville at the USDA lab, where the National Dairy Database is, did some analysis based on some parentage testing from other AI companies, and did some statistical prognostication about what the national level is and how it relates to our genetic evaluation. And it's a little like speaking to the choir here, but obviously they found a strong correlation between herd heritability estimates and the level of mis-ID in those herds. So the better ID you have, the better the genetic information is.
Right.
And the other key piece of information they provided was that they estimated that there was a 15% error rate in the national population. And that number has a big impact on how profitable it is to go down this road and go out and check the accuracy of individual animals. The other key item that really caught our attention was that the mis-ID rate was higher in larger herds. And doing some estimation, they came out with these estimates that showed a real steady increase as the herds got larger, the rate of mis-ID grew. And they estimated that the herds with 300,000 more had a 20% ID error rate. And this really caught our attention because the average herd size that we use for progeny testing is greater than 300 cows. So we sort of got really serious after seeing this study. One other key question was, how is this going to impact the evaluations of our sires? And would it be possible for us to recoup our investment in the higher ranking bulls and bulls that you could sell more semen of or charge a higher price for? And there was a nice study out of the UK published in the Journal of Dairy Science that made some assumptions about the progeny testing, that the average bull got $57, the average ID rate was 11%. And the trait was a trait like milk production at 30% heritability. And I thought this wasn't perfect for our situation. We get more daughters in our progeny test than this, but the statistics looked like our ID rate was higher than the assumptions they used. So we assumed these two factors balanced each other out. And we went ahead and accepted their estimates that the idea has reduced the standard deviation of the cider estimates coming from the genetic evaluation, and the breeding values were reduced by about a 9% level. So using some of these numbers, we concluded that we could carry out Parentage Idea and get our very best bulls ranking higher, and that would allow us to get onto those best bulls quicker and improve our profitability and recoup our estimates, recoup the money, the investment we made in the Parentage Idea. There's also some really good work in Israel looking at some of these things, and they did some economic analysis, and their results sort of on a national population basis indicated that with a $15 test and a 5% IDR rate, that you could go and test all the animals in your project test programs, and after 10 years of doing this, you would have recouped all your money spent, and it would be a profitable venture after that. So we don't necessarily make money on genetic improvement in the industry, but as a breed association standpoint, I think that is useful information as well. So, on with the results. So with having that information, we jumped in with both feet. We decided we were going to carry out a large program to verify the cellular identification in our progeny test units. We wanted to focus on the most promising bulls, because it doesn't really matter how accurate we are at the low-end ones, because if we get 5% more accurate, they're going to probably be 10, whether they rank in the bottom 25% or the 40%. We started the effort last September. We're continuing today, and so far we have results on 8,500 animals. And not going to get too technical, but one of the first questions we always get from producers is, can I trust the results? What information do you have to make sure that the calls are accurate? So we had some good discussion in the previous talk about how many SNPs, how many loci you need to make these comparisons. We had a little more luxury than the Davis data in that in our bull population, we spent a lot of time refining the genotypes on the bulls, and we tested and retested them until we had more than 90 SNPs. We were using the 99 SNP panel that was talked about in the previous talk. And so we had very solid data on all the bulls that were in the database behind us. On the females we're testing, it was a one-shot deal. We got one sample, ran through the lab once. It worked great. If it didn't, moved on down the road. So we didn't have a lot of time labor to fool around much. So these kind of results show how they break down based on the number of common loci between the progeny and the sire. And as you can see, we had more than 80% that we had more than 80 SNPs for that we could make a comparison for. Now, again, some decisions need to be made given how many SNPs you need to make the call, and we decided that to make that, draw that line here at 30 SNPs. We didn't have 30 SNP or 30 loci to compare. We had no results, and we attempted to make a call for anything over 30 loci. We tried a couple different sampling devices. Also some different protocol. Most of the samples we gathered were our salespeople, field staff, going out to the farms, finding the animals, doing the sampling themselves. We did try a portion where we sent, whether it was just one animal per herd, where we sent the sampling kit to the producer and said, you got a daughter of this bull, would you please send the DNA sample so we could check the parentage, and we'll pay you $10 for every sample you send back in. And in those cases, we didn't use the typical ear tag, we used a nasal swab. So we had some good amount of data to compare the two. We ended up getting much better results with the ear tag. We had much fewer samples that well, we got no result for, and a much higher number of compared loci using the ear tag device. And then if you look at the distribution of exclusions based on those samples, we ended up finding about a 17% error rate in the samples that we took, but more than 70% came out with zero exclusions. And the real point I want to make here, again, is going to this black and white call situation. So I want to zero in on the take the zero bar out so we can zoom, blow the slide out a little bit to take a closer look at the rest of the calls. And there's another decision you have to make that we talked about is how many exclusions do you allow? Again, our perspective is a little different than a breed association perspective where we're not really looking for the truth. We just want to make some reduction in the error that's out there. And we want to be really sure that the sire is not the bull before we go to the barn and tell his records are wrong. We tell the customer that his records are wrong. So based on this graph and just based on our objective, we drew the line here. We allowed two exclusions to still be an acceptable sire ID. And anything three or larger, as we were saying, is no qualifies. But the really comforting thing is that whether you set a 2, 3, or 4, those bars are all really small. Either you're getting 5 or 6 exclusions in this 99 panel, or you're getting 0 or 1, and there's very few in between that are all in that gray area where you're a little bit concerned about whether you're making a right call or not. So that was real comforting to us. And I think as we test more animals, bigger bimodal distribution. So what we're seeing in our bronchial test herds mirrors very closely what the USDA projected it would look like. We definitely see that the larger the herds, the more this ID we're finding. Although it's not quite as steep as what USDA was showing, our small herds here are at the 10% error rate, and they approach 25% when they're looking for 2,000 cow herds. I think one other interesting aspect that folks sometimes don't consider is folks accept that there's error rates out there and that it's a drag on our evaluation system, but they sort of assume that it affects all bulls equally. Well, I took all the bulls that we had 50 or more daughters tested for and just compared the different ID accuracy rates amongst those bulls, and most of them come out right around that average of 83-85% correct. But there's quite a few other bulls that some have less than 5% error, and others have more than 30% error. So the funny thing about this random error is it's random, and not all bulls are affected equally. So it's not just that you have the wrong daughters in the bulls group, but that some bulls are affected more by it than others. So it's pretty easy to see how that can really disrupt your rankings of your top animals. So then just a few experiences here as I wrap up. But we definitely are big fans of gathering the tissue samples with ear tags. It's a very controlled sampling method. The packages are already pre-labeled. Our guys go out there and grab the sample. It's already barcoded, and then with a tip of fixed marker, they just write on the animal's farm ID 352 on the back of the tag and send it in. And that's all the record keeping our field personnel have to do. The rest of it we do in our office to get the full official ID attached to that device and send it out to the lab. The other thing, even if you pay the farmers, they're not going to do it. So to get complete sampling, we're resorting now to our people gathering all those samples and exclusively using major tags. As we get more into this, the DNA testing part of it is really the easy part. The difficult part is resolving all the errors and dealing with the records. And I often comment that paternity testing is a messy business. And this is where it gets a little messy. So our plan was that for the records where we found a no-qualified result, we would just ask the record processing center, whether they would get a list, to go and just blank out that seller ID. Again, we're dealing mostly with commercial herds. It's not a big value loss to them, whether it's GMO's ID or not. So that's not too much of an issue. For the registered cows, it becomes more of an issue. In that situation, we look through the Holstein Association, have them follow up like they would when they do their own testing, to look at alternatives and try to do the best they can in filling in the correct site ID. And in these cases, the SNP-based testing has been very, very valuable to us in helping us find the real sire. The limitation we have is we don't have an industry-wide database running behind it. We just have the select sire's bull in the database. But if the alternative bull is a select sire's bull, we're going to find that with these 99 steps, it's going to jump out at us pretty easily. And then the whole process of getting the records fixed through the DHI system and the National Genetics Database really takes patience and persistence. We run into a lot of trouble when we don't get that official ID recorded, and basically we're almost to the point now, if we don't have an official ID, we're not even going to start the testing process, because it's too difficult to match up the records if we don't have it. We were hoping to get this all corrected, make the record correction pretty automated, so we could just send a file to the record centers and they would make the corrections and send it in both directions to the evaluation database and back to the farm level, but that has not worked very well. So we're now in the process of asking our field people to probably clock the samples, but to go back and fix the farm records as well, because unless you get it corrected at the farm level, that's really the only place you can be assured that it's going to flow through the rest of the system. One of the real positives in this whole experience has been the producer acceptance. We've only had a handful of producers that felt like we were invading their privacy or questioning their integrity. Most everyone welcomes the result, welcomes the opportunity to have this quality control in their record keeping systems. Most producers recognize they're not perfect and really want to know how good or bad their systems are. We have a number of examples where farmers have gotten the results and actually changed their management practices in how they go about taking calves or how they manage their calves. We had one producer hire a full-time person to monitor the calving pen that he didn't have before, and all of a sudden now he has a lot more live calves than he's had. Another producer found problems with the heifer raiser that were costly to him, and no one was able to fix that. So I think the most gratifying thing of the whole experience has been that when you can offer a technology to help folks solve some problems that they have, it really makes you much more valuable to them than just another person, another salesman that shows up. And it helps us, helps build loyalty and partners with the commercial producers as opposed to just another seller.